Parsha Reish is one of the most dramatic parshas in perhaps in all of Chumash. Three major episodes. A riddle to think about. One riddle to think about, and then we'll head into a raft of Rambans. One riddle to think about is what's the prop? There are three major episodes in the Parsha. There's Yosef and his brothers in Eretz Canaan, and then there's Yehuda and Tamar, and then there's Yosef in Mitzrayim with Potiphar, with Eshet Potiphar, with Sarah Mashkim and Sarah Ofim. So one riddle worth thinking about, answer is not coming just yet, is there's a prop, a type of item that's a very significant, pivotal item in all three major dramas in Parshas Vayeshev. And it serves to identify and to misidentify. Absolutely. So you can ask yourself that question. What's that prop that serves to identify and misidentify in the story of Yosef and the brothers and Yehuda and Tamar? And then again, it's particularly the way Chazal further highlight one aspect of the story, in the story of Yosef and Ishus Potiphar. What's the type of prop? You look like you have an answer. Yeah, what?
Type of garment.
Fantastic, fantastic, right? The Ksonas Pasim is used to identify, to mark Yosef as a person of distinction, and the brothers use it to misidentify as though he had been Chayra Achalasa. Right, then the story of Yehuda and Tamar. So she uses the clothing to... She uses it to if... She uses the veil to hide, to glove, to mask her identity. And then she uses the psilcha to identify, but in a subtle way, who the father of her children is. Yehuda himself. And then finally, with Yosef and Eshes Potiphar, of course, right, he leaves his baged. And she uses, he had left his baged biyada in her hands, because he ran away, but she presents, as Ramban points out, as though he has left his baged etzla, next to her, that he had willingly taken it off, and as though he had been preparing to assault her. That's something to think about, not for now, maybe we'll explore it later in the week, is what's the significance of that? What's the significance that in all the three major dramas of Vayeshev, Vayeshev is one of the Vayeshev is the beginning of the wheels turning towards Galus Mitzrayim. Galus Mitzrayim, up until now, it's all been the smoral galios of the Avos themselves, which were serving, as Ramban said, as Maisa Avos Simulabanim. But this is the first time that a Kal Yisrael Galus is beginning. It's beginning in front of our eyes. It's beginning over the course of Parsha Vayeshev. So the fact that clothing keeps recurring as a significant identifier and misidentifier. So Yesh La'ayin, what's Takib Shah? Something to think about. Maybe we'll explore it more later in the week. For now, I want to turn our attention to another major theme of the Parsha. We'll take a look at two tiny Rambans and then one larger Ramban. All three have to do, the larger Ramban I want to take a look at is the Ramban explains what is going on in the story of Yehuda and Tamar. All three Rambans are going to look at different angles on another major theme in Vayeshev, which is family. Take a look first, the opening Ramban, the Parsha, and this might sound like a briskerov that we once saw. Take a look, the opening Ramban, the Parsha is Vayeshev, Seder Vayeshev, Yaakov, Paraglam, Zayin, Pasuk Aleph. Tam Vayeshev, Yaakov, Eretz Yisrael. He opens the word Tam. What's the meaning of, what's the significance of, the Parsha opens, Yaakov Avinu is living, the Eretz Megurei Aviv. That's the way the Torah presents, frames Vayeshev, and perhaps the Parshas to come as well. It opens with, Yaakov Avinu is now living Be'eretz Megurei Aviv Be'eretz Canaan. Not just Be'eretz Canaan, which would be just sort of a straightforward description of naming where he lived, but he lived Be'eretz Megurei Aviv, in the land where
his
fathers lived. What's the obvious kasha? If you've been paying attention to the last 10-20 program of Chumash Bereishis, you know that Avraham Yitzchak lived in Eretz Canaan. Just tell me, Vayeshev Yaakov, the Eretz Canaan. Shine. Why the straight? It's not something that we don't know. We know that Eretz Canaan, A equals B. We know that Eretz Canaan is Eretz Megui Aviv. So you tell me you live near Eretz Canaan, obviously you live near Eretz Megui Aviv. So what's talk of the pshat? So what's the Chumash driving at? And what happened right before for 43 Pesukim? Right before Vayeshev, first part of Vayeshev, the last 43 Pesukim Vayeshlach? Esav. Oh. So he says, the Rabban says, Ki Omer Shalufei Esav Yashu Be'eretz Achuz Asam. We just spent 43 Pesukim telling you that Esav had children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, great-great-great-great-grandchildren, and all this aluf, and that aluf, and this king, and that king, and the Torah highlights for most of that section of the end of yesterday's laning that he had left Eretz Canaan. There wasn't enough room for him and Yaakov, and where'd he go? To Seir. Har Seir Hu Adom. We said that Lufei Esav Yashuv Eretz Achuz Asam, they lived, Esav's chieftains, they lived in their land, the land that was their heritage. Eretz Achuz Asam, Kolomar, meaning to say, Ha'aret Shalakhu Lahem, Achuz Asolam. The land that they had taken is their Makom Kavua. That's where they're going to live forever after. The national homeland of Esav is going to be across the Yarden in the south in Eretz Edom. Aval Yaakov Yashav Ger, Ki Aviv, Be'eretz Olahem, Ela Lechnan. That was a very quick sentence, a lot of phrases there. What did you say? Yaakov lived, like his father, as a ger. In a land that wasn't his, it was Lechnan. Be'eretz Megur Yaviv Be'eretz Canaan, the Rabban says, that's mamash loaded. It's not just that Yaakov, Avraham Yitzchak lived here. We're highlighting the fact there was merely Megurim, which, at least in the Hebrew of Tanakh, the ger v'soshav are opposites. He was merely a ger, like his father and his grandfather. He was living here, but he wasn't fully settled. It was still, at this point, the land of Canaan. Yeah, what do you say, Tom? And why is that significant? So what's the Chumash driving? It says, okay, now I the Rabban says, okay, I read the Pasuk now with open eyes. I actually pay attention to the word said, and that's what the word say. But unlike Esav, who, as the Pesukim said at the end of Vayishlach, had an achuza in Seir, here it's not an achuza. In contrast, here it's merely Megurim. Here it's he's living temporarily, not fully settled. It's really Eretz Canaan at this point. And that was similar, not only is he here, not there. And here's in a more temporary, Aroi fashion, not in Achuza, but it's also where Avraham Yitzchak had lived. As opposed to Seir, we have no record of Avraham Yitzchak spending any time in Seir. Yeah?
I also meant, maybe you mean that like he's living the same way as Avraham when Yitzchak did, because like the phrase, take your place, or take someone's place, really means like replace what they left. So like, say Yaakov and Avraham Yitzchak are no longer there, and Yaakov's taking your place.
Tachas Avosav. Tachas Avosav. If the language had been Tachas Avosav, it would sound like that. And there still is an element of that. Because what does this all mean? Very good. What does this all mean? Hakavana. Okay, now I know what the Chumash says. The Chumash has pointed out that he was living in a land here, in Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Canaan, not over there in Seir. And it's Megurim, not Nachuza. And it's where his father and grandfather had been. And the point, what's your point? Hakavana. The point is that Yaakov, like his father and grandfather before him, had made a bechira. They had made a choice, and as you're sensitive to the poetic language of the Ramban, they chose to live in the chosen land. I mean, the land was chosen by Ribbono Shalom. Like Hamakom Ashayivcha, the Chumash talks later in the halachic parts of Chumash. By Yerushalayim as the Makam HaNivcha, the Yer Nivcheres, Makam HaMikdash, but Eretz Yisrael as a whole, that the Rambam refers to Beis HaMikdash as the Beis HaBechira. That's the Hilchos Beis HaBechira, the opening section of Sefer Avodah. The Beis HaMikdash is the Makam HaNivchar, Yerushalayim as a whole is the Makam HaNivchar, and Eretz Yisrael, moving outward, concentric circles, Eretz Yisrael is Eretz HaNivcheres. Nivcheres in what sense? Nivcheres by the Ribbono Shel Olam. But also Rambam is pointing out, Nivcheres by people. Which people? Avram, Yitzchak, and now Yaakov. They are Bocharim, the same Shoresh, Lagur, Be'eretz HaNivcheres. They chose to live and to as Gerim in the land that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had chosen. So that's number one, impressive. You see their connection to, they're aligning themselves with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's choices, and they're aligning themselves with the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. And Rabban says, and there's more. Not only do you see, oh, a model, you know, their famous mashal, they tell that Chafetz fellow, a wealthy Jew, once came to visit Chafetz Chaim. This may have happened many times, but they tell that a wealthy Jew once came to visit Chafetz Chaim. I'm sure you've come across this story in the past, and it bears repeating. A wealthy Jew comes to visit Chafetz Chaim, and Chafetz Chaim, apparently for a significant part of his life, maybe for his entire life, lived with incredible frugality and simplicity. Very, very, very simple home, very, very simple spare furniture, nothing fancy in the slightest. So this wealthy Jew came to discuss whatever it was with Chafetz Chaim. And then he makes a remark, like, you know, the Rav lives with such, you know, bare simplicity. Like, you know, he would be glad to replace the table. He'd be glad to replace the chairs. He'd be more than glad to give the Rav's house an upgrade. So Chafetz Chaim apparently said to him, well, and he may have even said, like, he feels bad. Like, you know, I have such nice furniture. I was only right that you should hear. You're the Chafetz Chaim. And he says, so where are you staying now? Like, you're in Rod. The fellow didn't live in Rodden. He says, stay whatever inn. And you have an exquisite dining room set there, table and chairs. He's like, no. You have a headboard for your bed? He's like, no. So why not? You're telling me about the value of nice furniture. I said, well, I'm just traveling. I'm just passing through. Chafetz Chaim said, so am I. Just passing through. Right? A focus on what's important, something we saw a couple of weeks ago in the Ramban, in the Sevilla, the satisfaction of Avraham Avinu. So number one, you see that the Avos chose holiness over comfort. They could have had Nachuza elsewhere and said they were Geirim, but in the Eretz HaNevcheres. The Ramban says it's not only that the Avos were personally impressive and models of focusing on what's really important, like their great-great-great-great-great-grandson, the Chafetz Chaim, one day would be. But there's much more. This is of cosmic historical significance. Sheniskayim Bohem, and this line, opening line, it's the next line, I think the Ramban is bimrames to an idea that we saw in the Brisker Rav the other week. Sheniskayim Bohem ki ger yir zaracho, the eretz lo lahem. And you see also, not only that they were personally impressive people, but you see that the Brisbane Absarim is being miskayim through Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov, and not through Esav. V'lo be'esav, ki b'Yaakov levadu yikarei lehem zara. That had been the cosmic fight. Who's going to be ki b'Yitzchak yikarei lehem zara, b'Yitzchak v'lo kol Yitzchak? Who is going to be Zara Avram? Which part of Yitzchak is going to be Yaakov or Esav? That's what the Brisker Rav had, I think we mentioned a couple weeks ago at Mishmar. Brisker Rav writes in the Sefer, on Chumash at the end of Chayisara, the reason why the Torah spends 7 psukim at the end of Chayisara, 8 psukim, whatever it is, approximately 7 psukim, at the end of Chayisara, I think 8 psukim, 8 psukim at the end of Chayisara, on the Yichus of Yishmael, then a full 43 psukim at the end of Vayishlach. What's it all about? The Brisker Rav says, because now you see proof positive that they are not Zera Avram. The Birkas Avram was not going to them. That the promise of Torah mitzvahs in Eretz Yisrael, as HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Avraham Avinu and Bris Mei Absarim, was going to go via his progeny who will first, Vavod Nevi'inu Osam, Ger Yezarachah Be'eretz Olehem, Vavod Nevi'inu Osam, is going to be a galus. And following that galus, Be'eretz Olehem, then they're going to merge and get the rechush of Torah mitzvahs and Eretz Yisrael. So you see that Yishmael and subsequently Esav are happily, fully settled with, they're the dominant power with Alufim and kings and everything elsewhere. They're not going into Galus, and they're not seeking to stay in the Eretz and Nefcheres. So I think the Ramban is already being Ramiz to that right over here. That's the significance. That's the significance of the end of a Yishlach. And then right away, the Torah highlights, Masha Eino Kane, Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu did not establish an Achuzah elsewhere. Yaakov Avinu is staying here in the Eretz and Nefcheres, despite the fact at this point, the Kananim are the dominant power. It's not yet time. Kadosh Baruch Hu hasn't yet given the signal now is the time to push the Kananim out. So he has to be a ger. He has to buy land. Avraham Avinu has to buy land. And still, here's where they are. And the Ramban seems to say, I think it continues as well, the next paragraph, he wonders, the Chumash goes on, we don't call this Parshas Toldos, but the word Toldos appears in the second pasuk in the parasha. These are the toldos of Yaakov. Let me go on to talk about Yosef. Yosef ben Shvas, Reishana, etc., etc., etc. So Rashi raises the question, oh, the toldos of Yaakov are Yosef? How do you translate that exactly? How about the rest of the sons? So the Ramban quotes Rashi, quotes some of the discussion about that. Does toldos, maybe toldos means the events? Does it mean the children? Which maybe because later on we're going to list all the children. Then he has a line, a couple of lines in, V'hanachon be'enai, Ki Eila told us Yaakov Yosef ve'echav asher yaskir. Yes, it's Yosef and the other brothers who will be shortly mentioned. Yochaz ha'kasev derech yitzar b'shma osav shekar yaskim l'mayla. We already mentioned, named them earlier, so the Torah doesn't feel the need to list them all explicitly here. Aval amar Eila told us Yosef ve'echav asher eira lehem kacha. Told us means the children and all the events that the children would experience. And after Gamkin Jirmos Eile as Kohan is Karim b'Sefer Zeh Shivim Nefesh Yodu Avasecha Mitzrayma. I think what he's saying in that last line is that told us Yaakov might refer not only to the upcoming pasuk or even parsha, but the entire rest of Chumash Bereishis is included under the title of Eile told us Yaakov. In other words, the last 43 pesukim in Vayishlach were under the title of Eile told us Esav. That's told us Esav. And we're done. And now everything else is going to be told to Yaakov. Esav is now not, no, he's clearly not the Amma Nivchar. He's clearly not the fulfillment of Bris Mabsarim is not going to happen through Esav. The story of the Bris Mabsarim, which is the story of all of Chumash, now continues with Yaakov. Certainly the rest of Chumash Bereishis, I'm sorry, he says, going down, up until and including going down to Mitzrayim. That's all part of the told to Yaakov. So this, I think, gives it, as we've seen earlier, you know, the Eila Toldos is a recurring heading throughout Chumash Bereishis. Ramban almost here makes it sound like that divides Chumash Bereishis into its segments. You have the Toldos Shemayim Va'aretz, the Toldos Adam, the Toldos Noach, and then we saw Avram and Yishmael and Yitzhak and Esav and Yaakov. And that's really the breakdown of Chumash Bereishis. Then, before we get to Tamar, one other very, very brief Nakuda, a different angle on family. This opening pair of Rabbans had to do with the sorting out of who's merely biological family and who's spiritual progeny. That was on the cosmic level. This next one, Lamed Zayin, Lamed Hey, is on the very, very personal level, and this is something that we can and Emir Tshem will recur in your lives personally. Rabban is bothered by a simple kasha. Is that at the end of the first segment of the parsha, Yosef is gone. They send the Ksonas Pasim back to their father, and he's inconsolable. Absolutely inconsolable. The Torah says he surrounded his banav v'chol benosav, his sons and his daughters surround him and seek to menachem him. And it's unsuccessful. So Rabban is taken by a very simple kasha. The chol bin osav. What's the problem with that? The chol bin osav. Well, clearly, chol bin osav doesn't exclude Yosef. It's true. And the chol bin osav.
Only has one daughter.
Yeah. Who are the daughters? Lashon Rabbim. Who are the daughters? Lashon Rabbim. That what?
That there's one daughter for.
Good. So there is in the Medrash a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemiah. And being that you're from Riverdale, you should be even more sensitive to machlokas in the Medrash between Rabbi Yehuda and Nechemiah, because one of the rabbis emeritus of Riverdale, Rabbi Nachman Cohen, the rabbi emeritus of the Young Israel of North Riverdale, wrote an entire sefer, voluminous English sefer. Exploring, apparently, you don't hear Rav Nechemiah that often in halachic context, but apparently in Midrash Agada, I think particularly Bereishis Rabbah, maybe it's even the Midrash Halacha also, actually, I take that back. In the Bavli, you don't hear about Rav Nechemiah that much, but the Midrashim have many, he's one of the most common pairs of B'nai Plukta, Machlokas, Yehuda, Rav Nechemiah. he is a sefer, he tries to work out what is the fundamental machlokas between Nechemia that's playing out, you know, in 1,001 different ways. So this is one of the many machlokas between Nechemia, is whether the brothers were all born with a twin and they all married each other's sisters, or whether they married local women. Rabban elsewhere in the parsha discusses that. Very good. So take a look here. What does he do here? So he says, well, Bito Uvas Beno. Beno Sav, Mir Rav Mishnaim, at least two. So he had a daughter, and he had a son who had a daughter. Which son had a daughter? So as Rav Shavel points out in the footnotes at the bottom, we know that Levi had a daughter, Yocheved, but she was born later on as they're entering Mitzrayim. Asher had a daughter, Sarah, who's referred to here. Okay, Sarah was Asher. She's referenced to. So maybe Beno Sav is Dina and Sarah. Then the Ramban has a second approach. Yitachin, she kanes b'klal hazeh gam kalo sav imahen. Maybe Beno Sav includes not only his daughters by blood, but his daughters-in-law, his sons' wives. Ki b'chal ha-banos yikru gam ha-kalos king. When you say daughters, you mean both biological daughters and daughters-in-law. O kemar mar chachamim, ein adam nimna melikru l'kalosav b'nosav. V'chein amra na'ami l'kalosav. Because you find elsewhere in Tanakh that people would refer to, that someone would refer to a daughter-in-law as a daughter. Lechen ha-shod, lechen b'nasai shovna. And Naomi tells Orpah and Rus, Kindalach, don't come back there. Show with me. You stay in Moab. Go back to Moab. You'll be better off there. It's a very loving moment. There are a number of very loving moments in Megillas Rus. One of the particularly loving moments is Naomi says, I love you dearly, but you're better. It doesn't make sense for you to come back. I would personally love your company, but it's in your best interest to go back. And she refers to them as Benosai. Repeat al Benosai. L'chi biti. Again and again and again. You find that language. Ve'enenu rak dera. So what does it mean? But she's not her daughter. No, Rus is not Naomi's daughter, is she? No, not really. She's her daughter. She had been married to Naomi's deceased son. So what do you mean daughter? The answer is ve'enenu rak dera chiba bilvad. Halo shamat biti. That's a powerful idea, that if your sister gets married, you just picked up a new brother. If your brother gets married, you just picked up a new sister. And Mirtz Hashem, when you get married, you'll have your wife's parents. If they're your wife's iman abba, that means they're your iman abba, and vice versa. And that's true as a child-in-law, it's true as a parent-in-law. As we're going to see next couple of weeks, as we progress further in Hilchos Yichud, it's not always that way. In Chazal, we're keenly aware that there is a tendency often that the in-law relationships are not as ideal as they could be, to put it mildly. In Chazal, we're keenly aware of that fact. And at the same time, that doesn't mean there has to be a negative relationship. It could be. Unfortunately, often there is a degree of unnecessary tension in the relationship, but you should strive for better. You can have better, and obviously, why if you could be incredibly happy, why wouldn't you want to be? So what you're striving for is exactly the relationship that Naomi had with Rus, the relationship that Yaakov had with his daughters-in-law, which was Ben Osav. And there is another layer as well to Naomi and Rus, so we'll come back to that in a moment. Now let's turn our attention to our last Ramban of the morning, and that's the Ramban that deals with the most mysterious of all of all the parts of Vayeshev, maybe one of the most mysterious of all the parashas in Chumash, and that is Yehuda and Tamar. What is even the story of Yehuda and Tamar? It's just because you may not have, back when the Rebbe was taking you through parasha by parasha, paragraph by paragraph, every parasha in Chumash, it could be you didn't see Yehuda and Tamar at that point. So just a brief praises of the middle of Seder Vayeshev. After Yosef is sold down to Mitzrayim, before the Torah at the end of the parasha switches to the life of Yosef in Mitzrayim, we hear that Yehuda Vayeru Yehuda Me'isachav, Yehuda leaves the brothers, and some of the Farshim comment that maybe that he was sort of demoted temporarily because they regretted, they're beginning to regret having followed Yehuda's leadership in selling Yosef down the river to Mitzrayim. Yehuda goes off and he gets married, and he has Bathshua. He has a series of three sons with his wife, Er, Onan, and Shelah. And the boys begin to grow up, and Yehuda finds a shidduch for his eldest son, Er. Er marries Tamar. Er chooses not to impregnate his wife, Tamar. He wants her to remain, perhaps he wants, he thinks he, in his mind she'll stay prettier if she never becomes pregnant, whatever it is. Rashi quotes, other Rashi quotes, whatever Er's, wrong-headed motivation was, he chooses not to have children with Tamar, and he passes away. Passes away without children. So Yehuda says to Onan, "You should marry Shelah. You should marry Tamar. Excuse me. You should marry your deceased brother's widow." V'yabemosa. Here you see right in front of you. Here the Ramban quotes the language of Pasuk Ches, Perek Lamed Ches, Pasuk Ches. V'yabemosa. Do Yibum came Zera Lachicha. Onan follows his father, part of his father's instructions. He marries Tamar, refuses to impregnate her. He thinks Kilo Lo Yazara, the child wouldn't be his, and he passes away as well. Sounds from the Psukim that they both suffer Misa B'dei Shamayim for the sin of wanton, direct Hotzara Zara Vatala. Then Shelah. Now Tamar is almana twice, and Yehuda doesn't want to marry his third son to Tamar. It seems to Yehuda as though Tamar is a katlanis, as though you marry Tamar, it's a death sentence. He doesn't realize that it's because of his son's chatan. See, he doesn't wait. He says, oh, Shayla's much younger, you gotta wait. Eventually Tamar realizes that she's not, there's no hope for her marrying Shayla, so she uses a subterfuge in order to be intimate with, rather than with her deceased husband's brother, Shelah, with her deceased husband's father, Yehuda. Yehuda thinks that she's a zona, and she's very, incredibly attractive, and she draws him in, and he's intimate with Tamar, and then she asks for a mashkon, so he gives her three identified items. And then he moves on, comes back later on, can't find her. No one's ever heard of the zone of this location. It's getting very awkward. So they just, Yehuda and his friend, they just leave. A couple months later, Tamar is pregnant. What's Tamar pregnant for? How'd that happen? She was supposed to be waiting for Shelah. So she's judged to be Chayeves Misa for that. And then Tamar says, the father of the child, the father of the child in my belly, is the one who owns these items. And Yehuda says, Yehuda has the option to say, to ignore that, because only he recognizes them. But he recognizes them, and he said, Sadkei Meni, she's right. I'm the father. She's not Chayavis Misa. Tamar ultimately gives birth to twins. The positive Lo Yosaf L'Data ode. He was not Yosaf to be intimate with her. Yosaf is a famously ambiguous word. Either means he didn't continue or he didn't stop. It's not clear whether they remained married or that was the end of their relationship. She has twins, Peretz and Zerach. And Peretz ultimately becomes, as you remember from Rus, Peretz becomes the, or you remember from later in Chumash, Peretz is the great-grandfather of Nachshon Aminadav, and through Nachshon Aminadav, ultimately down the line to Yishai and to David. That's the story of Yehuda and Tamar. A very, very, very mysterious story. It's hard to figure out what exactly is the Torah driving at, what's going on, what's Yehuda up to, what's anyone up to in this story? What's going on? So Ramban has a profound take, and he relates this both to Ki Parshas Ki. This mysterious middle of Ayeshev to Ki Seitze and to Megillas Rus. I should mention, I neglected to bring this along, so I couldn't make copies to show you, but right before Thanksgiving, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Bezras Hashem, I came across the Sefer, happened to be in Beth Aaron, and there it was, sitting on the shelf, Marmar al Yishmael. Apparently the Rashba wrote a response to many of the theological questions that the Muslims had against the Torah, and it's Rashba presents it as a response to the anonymous Yishmael. Some scholarly discussion as to which book is he responding to. Whatever it is, it's a fascinating work by the Rashba. Even more fascinating for the fact that the Rashba lived in the Catholic part of Spain, not in the Muslim part of Spain. And he cared about the Jews who lived right next to him, and he cared about the Jews all over the world. So he was seeking his Dorish Shlomo Mishael, so all the Jews. So he was supporting the Jews who lived in southern Spain also. Of course, the Thanksgiving, I had a chance to explore some of the back and forth that the Rashba has there, and maybe some of the larger themes that still inform that emerged from that conversation, that still inform the contemporary conversation. One of the things the Rashba discusses, one of the questions that the Yishmaelim had was, how do you make any sense of the story? What on earth is going on? Yehuda and Tamar, this is such an embarrassing story. And this is where you claim Mashiach comes. David HaMelech comes from this, Mashiach comes from this. So the Rashba gives an explanation there that, not at all surprisingly, is more or less identical to what his Rebbe, the Ramban, writes right here, with an added twist also. Let's take a look. Yehuda turns to second son Onan and says, you should go marry Tamar, your late brother's widow. And you'll provide children for your deceased brother. So Rashi says, what do you mean, zera l'achicha, children for your brother? Heir is no longer alive. Habein yikarei al shem hameis, lashon Rashi. Rashi says, well, the child will be named for the nifti. You'll have a child, you'll marry Tamar, you'll have children with Tamar, and the first son, you'll name him heir after your deceased brother. So Ramban says, that can't be the case for a variety of reasons. He's about to snow us under with kashas. Number one, ain't ze emes. It's not true. Ki b'mitzvos ha-Torah nemar gamkein yokum al shem achiv ha-meis. B'mitzvos ha-Torah, in the halachi part of the Chumash, in Parashat Kiseitse, the parasha of Yibum, you have similar language, that the child that they'll have from the Yibum will become al shem achiv ha-meis. V'lo yimach yishmo Mishral, the nifter's name will not be blotted out, erased from Klal Yisrael. V'ein hayom mitzvah v'lekrov v'nok v'shem achiv ha-meis. And that's not the din. What you have here in a narrative context in Vayeshev, between Yehuda and Onan, you have in the halachas of Hebrew, as we know, you have a din. A man passes away, a married man passes away without leaving any living descendants, but he does leave behind a wife, at least one wife and at least one brother. Then there's a mitzvah of Hebrew for the brother or one of the brothers to marry the widow. The same as what Yehuda has Onan do. And the Pesukim there in Kiseitse uses language that you'll have children, the second brother will have children with the widow, and they'll be called al shem achiv ha-meis. Sounds as though he's named for the son, named for the brother. But that's not actually the din. Any of them with Suba the Krol of no shem achiv ha-meis, that's not the din. When you have Yibum, you don't have to name the first child after the deceased person. You could if you want to. And he says, how do you know? How do you know there's no such requirement? He says, well, take a look in, apparently, you also see in Rus, you have the same, you know from the Gemara that's not the same. And you see in Rus, Amar Boaz, Begamnes Rus, Amar Be'esh, Machlon, Karnisi, Nimli, Isha, Lo Hakim, Shem, Ha'meis, Ha'lachal, Ha'so. In Rus, you remember that the Rus, again, I said before, Rus was a widow of Machlon, of one of Naomi and Elimelech's sons. They come back to Eretz Israel, and there's this whole negotiation that goes on between Boaz, who is the second closest relative, and the anonymous closest relative. His name may have been Tov. His name may have been Ploni Almodi, or those both may be just anonymizing terms for whatever his name actually was. But the Goel, the closest Goel, so Boaz says to him, Boaz says, do you want to buy the land, the ancestral land? Do you want to marry Rus? And he says, no, I'm not interested. So Boaz says, okay, in that case, we agree that I'm second in line. So you have the right of first refusal. You refuse. So I'm second in line. I'm taking the opportunity to be Goel of the land and, more significantly, to marry Rus. And the language that he uses is, Lakim Shem HaMeis Al Nachalaso. And we make him the Machlon's name on his Nachla. The name of Machlon won't be cut out from the family. And they have a child. The Pesukim tell us that the child's name was Oved. Boaz and Ruth's son was Oved. It wasn't Machlon. Plus, behold, if it's all about just giving the name, Sha'amar Vayeda Onan Kilo Lo Yazara. Ono knows that the Zera won't be his. What's the issue? He's going to have to name his son heir? He refused to impregnate his wife because what's so terrible? Have a child of what? He's going to name a child for his deceased brother? Usually, in a situation where there's been a loss in the family, people are yearning to, you know, name a baby for the nifter. Why was this something that Onan was so uncomfortable with? Plus, Vayeda Onan. It doesn't say Vayomer. He knew, the Rabban says, means something deeper. Lo Omer Akos Vayomer Onan. It's Vayeda Kilo Lo Yehazar. What does that mean? Ki Yediya Berua Haisalo Bazeh. Shal Yeh Lo Hazara. It wasn't about the name. It was something that the child wouldn't relate to him. What was it that he knew? Now the Rabban says something very profound, as he tells us. This is a Sod Gadol. Yisrael Rabban says it's a sod, means we stay away entirely here. We could try to figure out a little bit with the recognition that we're not going to fully plumb the depths of what's going on here. This has to do with the Kabbalistic underpinnings of how people work. And it's clear to the eyes of those who see, if the good Lord gave you eyes to see and ears to hear, obviously Rabban doesn't just mean that you're neither blind nor deaf. It obviously means if you're attuned, if you're initiated into Kabbalah and you see beyond the obvious and you hear beyond the obvious, you understand beyond the obvious, you're going to know the following. So we can name it without necessarily fully understanding the content of it. He says, they knew generations before Matan Torah that there's some spiritual value to Yibum. That the fellow passes away without children, married without children, so you can do a lot for his neshama. His neshama will be healed, cured, elevated, supported, repaired, what have you. His neshama will gain tremendously from his brother marrying his widow, who are royalios kodzimbo, the acharav akarv mishpachi, either his brother or some other close relative. Sheiro kol sheiro akarv el mishpachto yagime toelas. Any blood relative who's in the line of Yerusha, if any blood relative marries the eshes hanifter, it'll do something. It'll spiritually heal, repair the neshama of the nifter. But the brother is the most potent. Again, I'm not initiated into Kabbalah, so I can't explain to the mechanics. At the bottom, he references some of the Mefarshim and Ramban talk about this having to do with Gilgul and Shamas. It's Ramban held of, other Rishonim did not hold of. Okay, whatever it is, Ramban says that there's some spiritual, metaphysical help that's given, support that's given to the Shaman of the Nifter, if a blood relative of his marries his wife, and they raise a family together. It's most powerful if it's a brother, if not, then some other blood relative. So the practice was long before they knew this. Rabban says they knew what this spiritual reality, this Kabbalistic reality, they knew about it long before Mount Torah. And either a brother, the brother of Nifta, would marry the the widow, or the father of the niftar would marry the widow, or some other relative. Says Ramban, says, I don't know, maybe this is even more ancient than Yehuda's. May have gone back earlier. He says, the Bereishis Rabba says that Yehuda hitzchah b'mitzvah yibum t'chila. Bereishis Rabba says that Yehuda was the first one to practice yibum. Where is he practicing yibum? So Pashtus is because he told his son to practice yibum. Okay, Pashtus. Kasher kibla. So in the Avosim, it could be they had never put into practice before. He had learned this idea from the Avos, from Avi Yitzchak and Yaakov. Nizdaret. Then a situation came his way. His son passed away tragically. So he said, okay, now we need to apply that principle that sowed that I learned from the Avos. Kasher Bosa then says, now you might be wondering, what's the obvious kasher? Rabban is saying that Yibum applies to any blood relative. It can apply to the father as well. But it's not true. Look in the Chumash. That's not the case. Look in the Chumash. It's only the brother. As a matter of fact, the very first Mishnah in Yevamos stresses that the following. You know, normally, if we're not for the mitzvah of Yibum, that relationship is not only not a chiyuv, it's an iser gamor yaharig valyava. Under normal circumstances, for a man to marry his sister-in-law, his brother's wife, regardless of whether his brother divorced her or his brother passed away, that is an iser karis yaharig valyavas gilui arayos. Under normal circumstances, a man marries his brother's wife and they have children. The children are mizerim. It's a terrible, terrible, heinous crime. However, the Torah says, and that's one of the opening discussions in Yevamos, is that the mitzvah of Yibum, in a case where there is a mitzvah of Yibum, in a case where all the conditions are met. In other words, if Reuven marries Aliza, and they have a family, they have children, and then Reuven passes away, for Reuven's brother Shimon to come and marry Aliza, that's Shalom Makar mitzvah, no mitzvah Yibum, Reuven has children, for Shimon to marry Aliza is a severe, severe chet. Yahar v'ayav. But if it's Makar mitzvah, if all the conditions are in place, the Reuven had no children, all the other conditions that come from Seches Yevamos, so then, now it's a mitzvah. The mitzvah of Yibum overrides what would normally be a severe, severe chet of Eishes Achiv. And so the opening mission of Yevamos stresses several things, but one of the fundamentals of the opening mission of Yevamos is that you can't violate any other. You can't violate any other erva other than Eishes Achiv. So for instance, let's say Reuven and Shimon are brothers, but Reuven is 30 years older than Shimon. So Shimon married Reuven's daughter. Shimon married his niece, which made sense. We don't. Nowadays, marrying within the family is not usually done, okay, for genetic reasons or otherwise. But, okay, it's reasonable. They're the same age. So Shimon married his niece, who was the same age as him, because his brother Reuven is much older. And then Shimon passes away. So now, in theory, you would say, well, the wife and the almana should be no fails to Yibum to her husband's brother. Her husband's brother happens to also be her father. So that's the opening mission of Amos. No such, Bizman said no such thing. There's no nefilah Yibum. The Zika Yibum doesn't kick in if they're related in any way other than brother-in-law, sister-in-law, Eisha Zachar. No other Isra of Gila Arayos is Nidche Mipnei Mitzvah Yibum, with the exception of the ubiquitous brother-in-law, sister-in-law relationship. The Ramban says, that's La'achar Matan Torah. You're wondering, what do you mean? So why are you telling me that Yibum fundamentally applies to all blood relatives? No, it only applies to the brother. The Ramban says, no. Fundamentally, this Kabbalistic concept that in the mechanics of neshamas, that the neshama of the niftar who had no children will be repaired somewhat by a relative marrying his almana, that Kabbalistic reality works with all blood relatives, including fathers, including cousins. But, he says, Kasha basa hator v'asra kitzasa kirovim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives the Torah at Sinai, and HaKadosh, but there had been an Isra Gila Arayos already, for Bnei Noach, but Kadosh Baruch Hu gives a much broader table of arayos, krovos v'asuros, for Bnei Yisrael. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ratzah HaKadosh Baruch Hu Lahatir Yisra Esha Zach Vepnei Yivam. Rebbe Hashem only was Matir Esha Zach, the sister-in-law, in a Yivam context. V'lo Ratzah Sheyidachem Epenav Yisra Esha Zach Yaha Av V'haben V'zul Asam. HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not allow you to violate other arayos such as an ant and so on and so forth. Why? Ki ba'ach hurgal hadavar, number one, the most common way that Yibam had been practiced up until that point, in the preceding centuries with a brother, and not only that was the most common, but to'elas krova b'hem, v'lo b'hem, k'mosh eskarti, al pi kabbalah, the brother is the most potent. Okay. So Rabban says, what did Rabban just tell me? A whopper of a chiddush already. He said, Yibam isn't just a mitzvah b'litah. I could have thought, sure, I don't know, the Torah says, do Yibam, do Yibam. It's a chok. Rabban says, no, it's not a chok. If you understand the metaphysics of neshamas, so you understand that it's an example of a powerful way of repairing the neshama of the nifter, and it really applies the spiritual reality is broader than just the mitzvah of yibum. And that's why Kodama and Torah, they practice yibum with other relatives also. So now what's he saying now? Now you look back, and you appreciate the whole parsha. Yehuda tells Onan, go be miyabim your brother's wife. Why? It's called the Matan Torah. Yeah, but Yibum is, we discussed a couple weeks ago, the Rabbani had a whole debate about whether or not they Lemaisa kept Kol Tarkula Shonitna. But even if not, he says, but this was a Metzias that they were aware of. This matters. This mentions that they did Chesed. It's a Metzias that helps people. This is a Metzias, and this is a type of spiritual Chesed. He says, do that Chesed for your brother. Onan, perhaps that's the way Rav Shemel understands. Onan misunderstood by Yeda Onan. It wasn't about naming what he's got to name his first child for heir. He probably would have been thrilled to name his first child for heir. But he had some concept of what his father wanted, but he sort of misunderstood, like the child's not going to be his child at all. Kielu, he's going to have a child that's really going to be heir's child. He said, why am I interested in that? He was so sort of like repulsed by the idea. He said, I don't want to have a family with her at all. And that's why the Tamar sought and succeeded in having a relationship with Yehuda. And when Yehuda recognizes what happened, says, Seth came in. Shitaka was right. And as the Psukim say, I was scared to allow her to marry Shayla because I thought that somehow she's a katlanis and anyone who marries her is going to pass away. But now I realize that she was a tzedekes and she saw and she was so dedicated to her husband, or her two husbands at this point, that she wanted to provide for their neshama by somehow working out a yibum which happened inadvertently through, unwittingly through Yehuda himself. It strikes us as a very strange scenario. But bear in mind, the Korban Torah, this was not a forbidden erva, kalasa. So it actually was, Yehuda then realizes, Tamar understood much more than I. And Tamar actually saw to it that it would be awkward, an awkward, embarrassing situation, but fundamentally a profoundly positive one. And that's exactly where Nachshon and David, ultimately Melech HaMashiach, all come from this episode. And we're not done. There's one more leg to this conversation. Because he points out that it's not just that Peretz is mentioned at the beginning of the genealogy that ends Rus, Megillas Rus ends that genealogy from Yehuda and Peretz all the way through Boaz, Oved, Yishai, and David, but he says there's a reference to this as well at the end of Rus. He says, he closes with the following two ideas. Number one, once you understand that Yibum is not merely a chok, but al pi kabbalah, it's an act of chesed. You're helping the neshama of the nifter. So number one, you understand nechshav lachzaris gadol ba'acha shelach bos liyabim. Now you understand why the psukim mikiseitze present a brother's unwillingness to do Yibum as something to be embarrassed of. We embarrass him. Beis halotzanal. It's part of the chalitza ceremony, if he chooses not to Yibum, instead he has chalitza. And a big thrust, one of the major thrusts of the chalitza ceremony, is that we're disgracing the brother. Look at this fellow. He doesn't want to take care. Well, he doesn't want to take care. Yeah, now we understand. that the act of Yibum would provide for his brother's neshama. It's something he can do, and he's choosing not to. So you say, what type of brother are you? And Beis Chalutz Hanal, it's not just that the shoes be removed, ki ata chalatz mehem. He's stepping away, he's unsheathing from his brother's neshama. Or maybe the brother's neshama is unsheathing from the family because of this unwillingness, this refusal to perform Yibum. And then he goes on to say, finally, Chachmei Shoal Kadmonim, the ancient Chachamim la'achar matan Torah, midaitam ha'inyan nechparazeh, they too knew this Kabbalistic concept. So are we still going to have Yibum with a father? Chas v'shalom. Because that's an Isser. We don't have license to violate the Isser of Kalaso in order to fulfill the concept of Yibum. However, and the Torah only mandates, it only requires it by the brother. Beyond the brother, it was never required. If it's any other Erva, it's Aser. How about if it's a relative who's not an Erva? A cousin. Reuven has a cousin Shimon. Reuven has a cousin Eliphaz. Reuven has a cousin Shimon. Reuven has a cousin Yisachar. Yisachar passes away without children. There's no brother. Or the brothers are not interested, whatever it is. No brother. So can Reuven marry, is there value to Reuven marrying Shimon's almana, his cousin's almana? So Rabban says, yes. Yes. Are you mechuyev too? No. Is that the mitzvah of Yibum per se? No. Does it accomplish some of the same value as Yibum? Yes. So he says, therefore the ancient Chachma Yisrael create a minhag. In Higu, lefanim bi Yisrael asos hamasazeh b'chol yor she'anachle. If there's no brothers, let some other bloodline relative who's in line to inherit, that's the inheritance is an indicator of a bloodline paternal relationship. Assuming that you're not so closely related that it's a violation of erva, so then you should practice this quasi yibum. What do they call this minhag of quasi yibum? They called it geula. The karu oso geula. Zehu inyan Boaz, and that's what's going on with Boaz. Meaning, so Boaz says, you be go, I'll be going, right verse before. What are they talking about? What is marrying Rus? What does Naomi want? What does Boaz want? What is the other cousin going to do, but he doesn't want to do? What's the whole drama of Rus? Rabban says, now you know what it is. The pshat in Rus is the pshat in Vayeshev. Is that there is a certain spiritual value, not as powerful as with a brother marrying the amana. It's not something you're mechiv to apidin, but you will still provide somewhat for the neshama of the nifter. And that's what Boaz says, that's what Naomi wants, that's what Rus wants, that's what Boaz is organizing. One of us is going to marry you. There is someone else, he's even more closely related. If he marries you, that'll provide for Machlon's neshama even more. So we'll ask him. We'll have a conversation. I'll ask him tomorrow. We'll see what he says. If he's in, gevaldik. If he's not in, then I'm next. And I'll ani acharecha, ani acharav. If he doesn't take care of you, I'll take care of you. One of us is going to take care of you. You're not going to be left floating. It wasn't only a question. It was also a question of economics. Naomi and Ruth were poor. They may have owned land in Eretz Yisrael, but they came during the harvest season. So it was too late to plant. So they were, pun intended, they were dirt poor at that point. They had a lot of dirt, but they were still poor. But it was much more than that. It wasn't only a question of their finances. It was to hoist the engineer's own petard. That's right. It wasn't only a question of finances. It was far more than that. It was a question of family, a question of who she was going to marry. Well, and it wasn't only a question of she's a wonderful young woman, but she's a Moavia, and it's hard for her to find a shidduch because of her yichus. It was, the Ramban says, there's a whole other layer to what was going on, which was the spiritual question of, can the neshama of Machlon get this tikkun? And he says that's why they keep talking about geula. Geula is this partial, this low-level yibum al pi minig. V'zeu inyan Boaz, and let's keep reading. V'tam Naomi v'hashchenos. It's also the meaning of Naomi and her neighbors, the hamaskil yavin. If you understand deeply, if you're a Kabbalist, you'll understand. What's with the Naomi and the Shechenos? That last line? Naomi and her neighbors? What's he driving at?
Didn't they call
her she was sad? Fantastic. Good. So Pinchas is thinking, where do we even hear about her Shechenos? So we do hear but Naomi most of the interactions of Naomi in the Psukim are Naomi and Rus. Naomi and Orpah, Naomi and Rus. Who else does Naomi talk to? So when she shows back up to Eretz Yisrael, they say, Hazos Naomi, and she says, Kiran Ali Mara, my life is very bitter. But at the end of Rus, it says that the Shechenos, the neighbor said, Yuladen Lenaomi. This is what the Rashba says explicitly in the Maamar Yishmael. They say, a child was born to Naomi. What do you mean a child was born to Naomi? A child was born to Rus. This baby is not related to Naomi at all. Right? Remember, this is Rus was originally Naomi's daughter-in-law. Rus had married Naomi's son, Naomi Elimelech's son. And now Rus had married Elimelech's cousin, Boaz. Boaz is not directly related to Naomi at all. He's related to Naomi's husband. So what I mean, Yulad Ben Lenami, it's not, Naomi's not the grandmother. So I'll be, so one level you could say with the previous Ramban, no, she was, Rus was a daughter, right? She was a daughter-in-law, she was a daughter who was a daughter. There was a healthy, wonderful relationship. They mamash felt like mother and daughter. And that's one of the beautiful parts of, one of the many, many beautiful parts of Miglas Rus, is to see how people can choose to take a relationship and make it phenomenal. But Rabban says there's another layer also, which is when they say Yulad ben Lenami, this is a son for Naomi, or a son for Naomi. Yeah, on one level, Ruth feels like a daughter, so this feels like a grandson. But it's also Mamasha's son. How so? Because this baby, Ove, wasn't named Machlon. It wasn't Nikra's shame, literally, they named Machlon. But the Ramban was saying is, what we said before, when you talk about the shame Hameis, it means not what you call him. It means on some deeper Kabbalistic level, the birth of this child somehow feeds, repairs, cures, whatever it is misaking the neshama of the nifter. The neshama of the nifter gets spiritual satisfaction, I don't know what the terminology should even be, spiritual satisfaction, spiritual support from this baby. That's what the psukim were saying in all the different places he had quoted before. As the psukim were saying here in Vayeshev and in Kiseitse and in Rus, the whole discussion about the Hakam Hashem means that they're having a child is going to somehow provide to that neshama, and therefore he says that's what the Shechenos mean. Yulah ben Lenami, that this baby Oved is providing for the neshama somehow. Be mashlim, be masakin, the neshama of Naomi's deceased son, Machlon. This baby is the Messiah. That Machlon was literally Naomi's son, Rus's first husband, and the birth of this child, the result of the geula of Boaz, is somehow a tikkun for the neshama of Rus's of Naomi's son. And if you work with what Rav Shavel's koi on the bottom for the Mefarshim on the Rabban, if to the extent that this tikkun is working through Gilgul Neshamas, as some of the neshama of the Nifter comes back, in some sense, into Al Mazeh through the child of the Yibam, so Yulad ben Lenami. Oved is born, and he's a Gilgul of Machlon, so the neshama of the son of Naomi has come back, in some sense. Again, I said before, Gilgul Neshamas is a big Machlon, so we showed him, think that it's somebody showed him think that that is the pashtus, and the neshamas come back to this world in different bodies over time. Other than Rishonim seems to be vigorously opposed to the idea of Gilgal. Ramban, I believe, in the Pirush on Eel, does embrace the idea of Gilgal and neshamas. So some of the Farshim of Shavuot quotes in the bottom think that's what Ramban is driving at. Regardless, Ramban is saying, and again, they said his Talmud the Rashba reflects this in the Maamar Yishmael, that Yibam is not merely a chok, it's a tikkun from the neshama of the nifter. It's even bizman hazeh, or even lachar matan Torah, it was al derech minag, practiced with other mutter relatives as well, like cousins. And kodem matan Torah is practiced by all blood relatives, not only brothers, but fathers as well. And that begins to help us to make sense of the positive aspects of the story of Yehuda and Tamar. So here we have different, as I mentioned before, just to close where we began, and one Tzar HaShava weaving its way through Vayeshev is clothing, as something to think about over the course of the week. But another Tzar HaShava, the Ramban is showing us that Tzar HaShava have family relationships. And they can be sometimes more than they appear to be. He still looked at the relationship between Yaakov and Esav, and specifically Yaakov's relationship to his father and grandfather, unlike Esav's, as being far more than just biological. And then we spoke about the relationship between Yaakov and his daughters-in-law. Despite the fact it was not biological, it was still kivas. And finally, the story of Yehuda and Tamar opens up the spiritual Kabbalistic perspective on family relationships as well.